वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्ण। I would like to welcome everyone to our Sunday feast program this afternoon. I beg for the blessings of all Vaishnavas gathered here so that I can speak or share my thoughts on the subject of Akrodha. Now, this is a very sublime topic and I have no competence to speak on this subject, but I am endeavoring to speak on the subject so that a trace of Akrodha will enter my being, so that I can be a good Vaishnava in service of Guru and Gauranga. So we sang Srila Lochandas Thakur's Akrodha Paramananda Nityananda Rai. So noble Lord Nityananda Prabhu is never angry, and he is actually the personification of Akrodha and Paramananda. Akrodha means freedom from anger and Paramananda means supreme bliss. So he is personification of that. And just as glories of Prabhu Ramchandra cannot be spoken without reference to Ravan, similarly, we cannot talk about Akrodha without reference to Krodha. Now, Krodha or anger is ubiquitous. Everywhere in the society, we see manifestation of anger. So first of all, I would like to speak something about anger. So this age in which we are living is Kali Yuga, an age of quarrel and hypocrisy, and is fully based on sinful activities. Sinful activities going on all around us. Sometimes we are able to notice them, sometimes we are not able to, but there are sinful activities going on all around, because that is the nature of Kali Yuga. So what is the basis of this sinful activity? So Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita asks a beautiful question to Lord Krishna. He says, Atha kena prayuktoyam papam charati purushaha anichchan api vashneya baladeva niyojate. Says, Atha kena prayuktem, what is it that impels, you know, human beings like us to commit sin? As if, you know, somebody is impelling you, somebody is forcing you, you know, to commit sin. And then the Supreme Lord Krishna gives an explanation why we commit sinful activities. He says, Kama esha, krodha esha, rajo guna samudbhavaha, mahashano mahapapma, viddhi enam iha vairinam. He says that it is lust only, Arjun, which is born of contact with material modes of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is all devouring enemy of the world. So Krishna is telling us, who is the real enemy? No, in our life we make many enemies and we make many friends, isn't it? But who is the real enemy? Krishna is identifying the real enemy, and he is within us. Is very much within us. And then again he says, elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 16th chapter, Trividam narakasya idam dwaram nashanam atmanah kama krodha tatha lobha tasmat etat trayam tyajet. So then Krishna is giving advice to Arjuna. He says that there are three gates leading to hell. Everybody talks of gates to heaven. Especially not devotees. Devotees don't want to go to heaven. They want to go back home to Godhead and serve Krishna. They don't even want liberation. But here, Krishna is saying, Trividam narakasya idam dwaram nashanam atmanaha. He says that there are three gates leading to hell: lust, anger, greed. And every sane man should give them up, for they lead to degradation of the soul. So these are three enemies lurking within us. There are others also, kama, krodha, lobha, madha, moha, matsara. Six enemies in all. But these are three principal enemies. Krishna is emphatically advising us. He is saying that anger is our enemy, both in material life as well as in spiritual life. So unless we identify and subdue, we cannot subdue our enemy unless we know who is or who it is. That is a common thing. So we must know that anger is an enemy. So if you identify that, maybe you know our efforts to subdue anger, to manage anger, to control anger will be successful. His Holiness Radhanath Swami had once narrated to us an incident during the Vietnamese war. What used to happen was that, you know, very many times American soldiers, after the war was over, they would go and relax at a particular place. And an old Vietnamese lady, she would ride on a cycle. And she would come there and, you know, distribute to them, you know, cold drinks, you know, colas or whatever. And she would ride the bike and again go away. One fine day she came there. By this time they thought that she is a friendly old lady. One fine day she came there and took out a gun and shot all the people. So they didn't know who the enemy was. So identifying the enemy is very, very important. It is a prerequisite for us to conquer the enemy or subdue the enemy. So similarly, it's a prerequisite for us to understand what is the enemy within us. And that's very, very crucial for us to pursue spiritual life. So actually, what has happened to our Vedic society? You know, our Vedic society, you're so full of peace and pleasure. There was a time when people in the society seemed to be happy. They might not have had, you know, lot of wealth to flaunt. They might not have had, you know, cars, or they might not have had, you know, mobiles or whatever. But people were peaceful. I remember when years ago, my father was a government servant, didn't earn much. But we were happy in the family. We were five brothers and sisters. And there was no money to talk about. But still, we were very happy. Where has that peace gone? If you just analyze, we see that the society in which we live, it is every person seems to be, you know, hyper. Wherever you go, he's hyper. Whether you are in a train, whether you are traveling in a bus, whether you are in a street, wherever you are walking on the footpath, you name it. And people are, you know, really hyper. They are, you know, always in an excited state. They are very, very, very easily provoked. Very easily provoked. As they say, at the drop of a hat, they get provoked. There is no special reason why they get provoked, but they get provoked. I recall that once, you know, I had gone to Mira Road, and some satsang, and, you know, while coming back, my wife and I both were trying to get into a train. It's quite a challenge, I can tell you, getting into a train at Mira Road. So my wife could get in and I somehow could not get in. So she went ahead. Fortunately, she had a ticket. So then somebody told me, Prabhu, why don't you go to Bhandar and catch a train? That seemed to be a good idea. I said, okay, let me go to Bhandar and catch a train. So I bought a ticket, got into a train going to Bhandar in the opposite direction. And when I went to Bhandar, I found that the train was empty. I was thrilled. My God. An empty train I got into, and I got into the train and went and sat in a particular corner waiting for the train to start. Soon a group of people came inside. They said, get up. I said, why? I have a valid ticket. They said, no, get up. Already they were angry. Reason was not clear. I said, get up now. I said, this is a place where we play cards every day on our way to church gate. You know, and with great difficulty, you know, I have got this Bhandar special. So, you know, you can't occupy this space. I said, all right, I'll go to some other corner. What choice do I have, you know? So I went to some other corner. After some time, another group came there. They said, get up. This is our place. No, you can't sit here. I was shocked. And they said that if you now argue, we'll throw you out of the train. So hyper, you know. They were in an angry mood for no rhyme or reason, and they said that we'll throw you. So this is actually how it is. you know, small little things, you know, can provoke people into doing things which are, you know, all wrong. If you go around, if you read in the papers, you know, road rages, this, that, everything is happening because, you know, of this enemy, that is anger within us. And this is actually the worst type of scenario that we can imagine. Very often, I remember when I was in the university, I have heard sometimes students speak. They would say, you know, majha talpayachi aag mastakala jate. Have you heard this? Many who know Marathi must have heard this. Talpayachi aag mastakala jate. That means I get, you know, angry, you know. Or, you know, majha doka sanakta or something like that, you know. Amazing. Prabhupada used to say, you know, our feet, you know, talpaye, they should always be, you know, warm, and head should be cool. That is what Srila Prabhupada used to say. But modern day society, it seems to, the reverse seems to be happening, you know. Everybody is, you know, angry. So we are living in a city or even in a country of, you know, angry young boys, children, angry young men, angry old men like me. Everybody seems to be, you know, in this mood of anger. So I crave your indulgence. I want to little bit use, you know, science here. So there is a branch which is of spectroscopy, you know. You must have heard the word spectroscopy. And, you know, in that spectroscopy, I'll put it in a very simple word, there is a concept of, you know, excited states. You have a ground state and you have an excited state, you know. So when an electron, you know, interacts with some radiation, it goes from ground state to excited state. And while coming back to ground state, it emits, you know, radiation. It can be called phosphorescence or fluorescence, you know, it will emit some radiation. The same thing is applicable. All of us, you know, we have our normal state in which it is freedom from anger. And we easily go to angry state, you know. And to come down from angry state to normal state, we emit, you know, abuses, bad words, curses, or sometimes, you know, get into physical violence. You know, this is what seems to be. This seems to be the case. So this is what the society we are living in is manifesting to us. So it is said that anger is one letter short of danger. You add D to it, it becomes danger. So anger is really dangerous. Now all of you must have heard seminars on anger and anger management. So many of the things which I am going to speak are, you know, known to you. But you can, you know, refresh your memory. So the point is that in this very fast-paced life, everyone has become really hyper. And unless we have a society which is peaceful, that's what we get in Krishna consciousness. When we do kirtan loud, you may feel that, you know, it is noisy. But actually, you know, it gives you peace in the core of your heart. So that peace is something which every living entity craves for, but doesn't get. That's the problem. So, what is the genesis? Now, what is it that causes, you know, anger? Krishna has explained it very beautifully in Bhagavad Gita. We just have to read Bhagavad Gita to understand what causes anger. He says, Dhyayato vishyan pumsa, sangasteshu upajayate, sangat sanjayate kama, kamat krodho abhijayate. It's a sequence. Dhyayato vishyan pumsa. When we contemplate objects of the senses repeatedly, and there are enough objects around in this material world, you see all the hoardings, you see all the ads in the TVs, objects of senses. When you contemplate on them, continuously you feel that like having it. You develop attachment, kama. You develop a desire to possess that particular object or possess that particular person, particular car or whatever. And then what happens? We develop an attachment. And kamat krodho abhijayate. When that desire is not fulfilled, either by your efforts or by somebody's efforts, you become angry. Krodho abhijayate. And then what else happens? క్రోధాత్ భవతి సమ్మోహ సమ్మోహ స్మృతి విభ్రమ స్మృతి భ్రంశాత్ బుద్ధినాశో బుద్ధినాశాత్ ప్రణశ్యతి. ద ఎంటైర్ సీక్వెన్స్ కృష్ణ హెస్ గివన్ ఫర్ అస్ వెరీ గ్రాఫికలీ డిస్క్రైబ్ ఫర్ అవర్ ప్లెజర్. మీ సేస్ దే డోంట్ గెట్ అటాచ్ టు ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ ద సెన్సెస్ అండ్ వెన్ యూ గెట్ అటాచ్ యు నో యూఆర్ గోయింగ్ టు యు నో బి ఫ్రస్ట్రేటెడ్ ఇఫ్ దట్ డిజైర్ ఇస్ నాట్ మెట్ విత్ and then that is going to lead to you know series of problems one after other ultimately leading to buddhinasha loss of intellect. So when you are lose your capacity to you know discriminate what is right what is wrong this way I should do it or this way I should not do it you lose that capacity and when that happens what happens pranashyati actually it is fall. So we fall down we may be on the spiritual path also but if we still have this streak in us it is guaranteed by Krishna that we'll have a fall down you know we'll come down to the material pool. So therefore we have to be very very cautious even though we may be in Krishna consciousness we have to be very very conscious. A graphic example of this is Ajamil. I won't go into the story of Ajamil. I have many other stories to narrate. So Ajamil you know is an example. He was from a pious Brahmin family, dutiful, dutiful son, dutiful husband, dutiful father, everything. And then on fine day, you know, he happened to see a prostitute, you know, in a very, you know, embarrassing, you know, position with another man. And somehow or the other, this Brahmin saw that and Dhyayato Vishyan Pumsa. From there on, you know, his degradation starts. Graphic details are given in Srimad Bhagavatam, which we can read and understand the how this particular verse which Lord Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita, Dhyayato Vishyan Pumsa, is very, very valid and very, very real. And Ajamil has a fall down, is totally devastated until when he becomes very old by Krishna's mercy. He is able to chant the holy name of Lord at the time of death and then he is saved by Vishnu Dutas. Very beautiful episode in Srimad Bhagavatam, which everybody must read and relish. So that's there. So one of the reasons why we develop anger is because of not attaining the objects that we desire. Now Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada also has repeatedly mentioned that it is not, kama does not mean just the objects. Kama, desire can also be for puja, labha and pratishtha. Puja. We expect to be adored by people. We expect profit. Puja, labha and pratishtha. We expect prestige. No. A politician may not mind so much, you know, if he doesn't get anything else. But if he doesn't get, you know, prestige as a politician, you know, he is very much, you know, angry. So these are factors which contribute. So this is one reason why, this is the genesis we are discussing. This is one reason why anger is there in human beings. The second reason is egocentric attitude. Again, Krishna gives this reason for this. Prakrute kriyamanani gune sarvani karmasha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. So, this idea that I am the doer. Some people think, you know, that the sun will not rise, you know, if they do not get up. Or the cock may crow in the morning, you know, thinking that if I don't crow today, maybe the sun will not rise at all. No, we used to have a poem in as children, cock crows in the morning to tell us to rise. So, cock is crowing in the morning, but it is not that the sun is waiting for the cocks, you know, crowing. Sun will rise every day according to his, you know, desire and according to his will. So, like that, so, this egocentric attitude in us that everything, you know, is happening by my will. And if I don't do it, I, aham mameti, you know, that attitude, egocentric attitude is also responsible for anger. You know, want to do things, you know, in a particular way. So this is also, egocentric attitude is also responsible for anger. So we have to understand, therefore, we can conclude, therefore, that anger is a negative, very negative emotion. And it is devastating. How is it devastating? Many examples. It is said that anger has influence on our body, physiological you know, influence. It's well known example is that a lady, you know, was breastfeeding her child, and the child, you know, suddenly died. The doctors could not find any ostensible medical reason, no, that milk is contaminated. Of course, these days, mother's milk also is contaminated with pesticides. Pesticides which are sprayed on crops, they have a way of entering into, you know, the cow eats those things, and through cow's milk or even through, you know, what we ingest in foods, pesticides enter. They are also poisonous. But here, the child died, and they investigated and they found that there was no apparent reason for the child's death. But the mother was tremendously angry. She was in a very foul mood. She had a fight, very foul mood. And in that angry mood, she fed her child. So she released, you know, toxins. Those toxins, you know, killed the child. So we should not be angry, you know, while eating. You should be very careful. Even if you are angry a little before, shed that anger and then, you know, honor your prasad. So that's very important, physiological. Then emotional, you know, anger makes people, you know, very, very emotionally unstable. They become unbalanced, absolutely. And long ago we had read in the newspaper that Prince of Nepal, you know, he became emotionally unstable and he killed 9 members of his family, including his parents. He shot them dead. That's how it is. This is what anger does to people. You become emotionally unstable. Today morning in Govind Prabhu in his class was talking about Narad Muni, isn't it? He was talking about Narad Muni actually benedicting Nala Kuvera and Manigriv by cursing them. And Govind Prabhu made a very beautiful point. He said that when Narad Muni cursed these arrogant, you know, sons of Kuvera, actually he was giving them a benediction. And he was not doing it in an angry mood. That even that curse was not in an angry mood. Because when we are angry, there is no coherent thinking, he was saying. He used the word coherent thinking. Now, when we are angry, we lose our discrimination and we are not coherent in what we say or what we do. But Narad Muni was not incoherent. He knew exactly what he wanted to do to these two sons. He wanted them to be punished, undoubtedly, but he wanted the punishment to be a reward. That is not incoherent thinking. An angry man cannot think coherently. But here was Narad Muni, the pure devotee of the Lord, fully coherent. He knew exactly what he wanted to say and what he wanted to do. So this way, emotional disturbance. Then socially, social disturbances. You know, the crime rate increases. When the society is in an angry mood, you know, crime will, you know, increase manifold. Then political influences, there are riots, terrorism, you know, wars, intrigues, all kinds of things happen. And then financial, mob fury, I think all of us staying in Bombay have experienced this, Mumbai, I'm sorry. So all of us staying in Mumbai have experienced mob fury, buses being burnt, trains being burnt, cars being set ablaze, as if it is their property. So that is mob fury. This is anger at its worst. It's fury, rage. Then this is financial losses. Crores of rupees are lost. Then some experts will come, you know, in this particular, you know, riot, so many crores were lost. You know, some expert, financial expert will give you the estimate, you know. But whatever it is, things have been lost and gone. And spiritual, we are concerned with that. And spiritual, you know, thing is most important. Krishna is giving very clear instructions. He is saying that Nashanam Atmanaha, the soul is degraded and gates to hell are opened. So thus, we find that anger can influence our lives very much. I would like to share with you some stories which you already may be knowing, but bear with me, because they highlight the subject on which I am talking. So first, there is the story of a famous king called Chinggis Khan. Now this Chinggis Khan, he had a pet hawk, you know, pet hawk Hawk was his pet. Many people have many types of pets. Some have tigers, you know, lions, you know, some have, you know, rats. You can have any pet. His pet was a hawk. So whenever Genghis Khan, you know, would go hunting, whenever he would go, the hawk would accompany him, and he would also have many soldiers with him in hunting. And what was the hawk's job? So whenever Genghis Khan would go near a forest for hunting, the hawk, you know, would fly in the sky and, you know, do scouting for him and come and indicate where the wild animals, you know, are localized so that Genghis Khan could go and shoot them. This is how it was happening. So this way, every day when he went for hunting, this hawk would accompany Genghis Khan. But one day what happened was Genghis Khan got separated from his retinue, and he was going into the forest with his hawk sitting perching on his hand, and he became parched with thirst, became very thirsty, unbearable thirst, you know. So he became very thirsty. So he did not know, he wanted to drink water, and he was riding on his horse, he was searching here and there, and then he went and he saw a rocky, you know, surface, a rock, and water was trickling down on the rock. Water was trickling down slowly. Looked, you know, very, very attractive. You know, water trickling, I'm thirsty, I have to drink that water. So he took out a golden cup from his, you know, bag which he was carrying, and he went and held it on the rock where the water was trickling. He was trying to gather that water, and when the cup becomes, you know, full or half full, he will drink it. So he went into that action. He was collecting the water, and promptly the hawk came and knocked out the tumbler from his hand. Genghis Khan could not understand, but he said, okay, it's my pet after all, you know, once in a way playing some mischief with me, it's okay, I can tolerate. Just as, you know, parents tolerate some wrong activities of, you know, children. So that, okay, he's doing this, it's all right. Then he again picked up that tumbler and again went to that rock. Again he started collecting it. Second time, again, this hawk came and knocked down the tumbler. This time, Genghis Khan went into excited state. He became angry, became very angry. He said, you may be my pet, but if you do this once again, you know, I'm going to kill you. So he took out his sword. He was ready. Next time, you know, he again went and collected the water, and he found that the hawk came again. He knocked out that tumbler in such a way that the tumbler went and fell above the rock from where the water was trickling. He became very angry. He, with a sword, you know, he killed the hawk, his own pet, he killed the pot. Then he said, let me, you know, but now the tumbler is on the top of the rock, so let me climb up. So he climbed up the rock, and he saw that there was a reservoir of water in which there was a deadly snake which had spewed all its poison into the water. And this hawk was trying to save its master from poisonous water. And then, you know, he became miserable. So this is what happens. This is what anger does. We do actions which, irresponsible actions. So he did that, miserable. Then I had read, this came in the internet story. Many of you must be familiar with this. So there was this American, typical American person. He bought a brand new truck, no? That beautifully painted, shining, very, very attractive. Then he had a three-year-old son. Now this three-year-old son, he also became attracted to the truck, but in a different way. He took a hammer, and, you know, he started hammering the truck, and, you know, created, you know, scratches and dents in that. Father had not noticed it. When he came, he flew into a rage, you know. Became very, very excited. He said, here I have, you know, invested all my money, you know, into buying this truck, and this boy has come, and, you know, he is damaged my truck. So he took that hammer and hammered it on the fingers of his son. After doing it, he realized that he had done the most stupid act in his life. Too late. This is what anger does to us. We do stupid, idiotic, inhuman, ruthless activities when we become angry. So it hit. His fingers were maimed. He took the boy to the hospital. The boys had to amputate all the fingers. So, miserable experience for the father and for the boy. But the boy, you know, 3-year-old, what does he realize? So, next day morning, the father went to meet him. And then, you know, he talked to him sweetly. Then the father asked, "How are you?" And then the boy said, "Papa, when will my fingers, you know, grow back? When will my fingers grow back?" This was the question that the boy asked in innocence. And this, you know, really jolted this personality. So he came home, he shot himself. "What have I done to my boy?" So this is anger, you know, which is at its worst. There is one more thing from the internet again. This was again a person, you know, traveling in a most expensive car. I don't know how it is pronounced. Jaguar car. Okay, he was traveling in that car, very, very expensive car, and it was in a fast lane, driving very, very fast, happy with life, everything going on smooth, you know. And then suddenly a stone comes and hits the car. He stopped the car, got excited. He said, "Who has done this damage?" And then he saw a small boy. He said, "Who has done this?" He said, "Please, sir, I have done it." He said, then this fellow got very angry and he just lifted him, you know, and he wanted to throw him. Then he said, "Please, sir, please listen to me." He said that my crippled brother is in a wheelchair and his wheelchair is about to fall down. I am not able to control it. So please, I wanted to attract attention of somebody who could come and help me with that wheelchair. So this man went there and he really saw, you know, what are the precarious position in which the younger brother of that small boy was in. And he helped him pick up. And then he decided that he would no longer, you know, yield in or give in to anger in this type. He said that, you know, I'll retain this mark. You know, how inhuman I had become, you know, that I was about to, you know, throw that boy down. How inhuman I had become. So he kept, it is said that he kept that particular, you know, mark on his car, you know, as a remembrance of his cruelty, so that he wouldn't repeat it again. So this is another poignant story. Then one more story of Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great, he is supposed to have conquered everything. So he went once to Vrindavan. It's a famous story, everybody knows. So he went to Vrindavan, and when he went to Vrindavan, there was a great sadhu there who was, you know, worshipped and respected by everyone in Vrindavan. So he wanted to have a meeting with him. So he sent his soldier to that sadhu and said that, "Ask that sadhu to come and meet me, you know, that hermit to come and meet me." So the soldier went to the, you know, ashram of that sadhu. He said that, "Please, sir, you know, great, Alexander the Great, he has come. He's outside. He wants you to come and meet him." The sadhu said, he said, "We don't recognize any king here in Vrindavan. We recognize only Vrajendra Nandana, Krishna, as the supreme king. So if he wants to meet me, let him come here." So this message was given to Alexander the Great. He became prestige, you know, "I am Alexander the Great and this ordinary hermit, you know, sadhu doesn't want to come and, you know, pay his respects to me." He became very angry. He said, "Go and repeat this, go and tell him that, you know, I am Alexander the Great." But the message had no effect on the sadhu. "Okay," I said, "let me go and meet him then." So he got down from his horse and, you know, went inside. He went in great rage. He said that, you know, "What has happened? You know, why is it that, you know, I am Alexander the Great, why is it, you know, that you did not respond to my request, why did you not come? He said that, you are, you know, my servant. You are my servant. And actually in one sense, you know, I am the master. He said, servant? I am Alexander the Great. There is a question of my being servant of everyone. He said that you are the servant of your anger. You are the servant of your anger. And he said that I have conquered anger, so you are my servant. Alexander the Great, you know, retraced his steps. He could not respond. He could not respond and he returned. So this is to indicate how, you know, anger can ruin our consciousness totally. It can totally, completely spoil our consciousness. So very trivial reasons can spark off anger. So in science again, little bit, there is the concept of, you know, flashpoint, you know. Everybody must have heard of flashpoint, you know. Petrol has a flashpoint, kerosene has a flashpoint, all solvents like benzene, toluene, all they have flashpoints. So at a particular temperature they catch fire. So in our society today, the flashpoint is very low. Anything can, you know, trigger off anger in a person and can lead to disaster. So therefore, we have to basically, we have read in papers that there have been murders because of, you know, parking space rages, you know. This is my parking space. No, 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 it is yours, mine, this. No, you, that way, you know, people fight, get angry and fight. So this way, aggressive hostility everywhere around us. So with this background, I would like to come to Akrodha. We have talked about Ravana. We will talk about Akrodha now, the remaining part of the lecture. So Krishna says, gives us instruction, tasmat etad tyajet. We have to give up anger. Now, more easily said than done, of course. More easily said than done. Now, we are not devotees on the platform of Hanumanji or Arjun, who also became very angry. But they used their anger in service of the Lord. Hanumanji used his anger to, you know, put down Ravana, the arrogant Ravana. He burnt Lanka. He dovetailed his anger in service of Prabhu Ramchandra. He actually wanted to indicate to Ravan that if an ordinary servant of Ram can, you know, create such havoc, how about Prabhu Ramchandra himself when he attacks you? So beware. Arjun also, you know, used his anger during the war on the instructions and in service of Krishna. So that is dovetailing anger. So anger must be given up. It's like acid, acid in a metal, you know, vessel. No, like, you know, sometimes, you know, in a copper vessel, if you put tamarind, you know, what happens? Tamarind, which has got acids, it attacks the copper. Like that, anger is like that. It actually corrodes and burns up the vessel of our own consciousness, in our own body. So that needs to be avoided. And there is age-old wisdom, you know, in giving up anger. Some few things, a few statements, few quotes. He who suppresses a moment's anger may prevent a day's sorrow. For a moment, if you can control that, suppress that anger, you may avoid a sorrowful day. And the greatest remedy for anger is delay. Postpone. You know, somebody comes to, you know, fight with you. He's in an angry mood. He wants to have an encounter kind of thing. So, you know, in all peaceful way, you ask for, you know, time. Bide for your time. I have practiced this in my own life, in the university sometimes, you know, at the end of the day, you know, some staff member would come, he comes to fight with me, you know, not physical, but, you know, he wants such and such a grant, you know, it was given to him, not given to me. No? I would say, please, you know, it's a very important topic, but, you know, we'll discuss it tomorrow, you know. So he goes back home, you know, and then, you know, he becomes calm. Next day when he comes, you know, his mood has changed, and, you know, I'm in a position to, you know, talk to him.
So delay, postpone things. When you feel that there is a provoking situation, you postpone things. You do things. Then you know, you can try other things. Management of anger experts, they tell us go for a walk, drink water, inhale, count 1 to 10 if you are little bit angry, count 1 to 100 if you are very angry. It goes on like that. Many suggestions come, but take counseling, from people, and then you can conquer anger. We have the example of Dhruva Maharaj taking counseling, from Kubera, and his great grandfather Swayambhuva Manu. So all these examples are there in Bhagavad. So all these are practical tips which can be discussed. But what is the real solution? The real solution to dealing with anger is spiritual solution. It has to be a spiritual solution. It cannot be drinking water, going for a walk. So when you go for a walk, you may come back with more anger in your heart. So it is important that Shastric knowledge, especially things like scriptures like Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad, they are very helpful. Because through scriptures, we can understand what is the impact of anger on human consciousness. So once we understand this impact of anger, then we are in a position to control the anger. So we have to introspect. Every time we give in to anger, we have to repent and not repeat. So we have to do this. That is one of the solutions. Or become totally impervious or resistant to whatever people say or whatever people do. Long, long ago, before we came into Krishna consciousness, I had read about a sadhu who went to the United States. He was walking in the streets and young boys, there, they were making fun of him, abusing him, in general. So it went on for a fairly long time. So an old lady was watching all this affair, the boys, harassing this sadhu. So she came down to this sadhu and she said don't you have any shame, sense of shame? These boys are cursing you, abusing you, and you are not reacting. Why don't you do something, say something about it so that this will stop? He said that I have not received the curses which these people are, heaping on me. And then he gave the example. He gave the example of a dead letter, box. No, supposing a letter comes to you and postman comes and gives it to you. Forget about courier service. He comes and gives to you that letter and you refuse to accept it. It has come by post. Repeatedly you refuse to accept it. What happens? It goes to dead letter box. That's the end of it. So similarly he said that, these people are cursing me, abusing me, but I have not received any one of this. So I am impervious to that. And he walked on. So this is one of the ways that we try and remain unaffected by what, people say to us in an angry outburst. We try to, resist that. This is one of the ways. So this is tolerance. So we have beautiful examples, won't go into details. We have Haridas Thakur, being beaten at 22 marketplaces and forgetting, not only forgetting their offense and forgiving the very tormentors and praying for their welfare. When he was being beaten, he was praying to the Lord, that please let them, my tormentor, those who are beating me, let them be, Krishna conscious. That's how he was praying. So that is, height of, forgiveness, titiksha bhav. So titiksha is a very important consideration. Tolerance is a very, very important concept. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, matra sparshas tu kaunteya, shita ushna sukha dukkada, agamapayano anityaste tam titiksha swabharata. So titiksha, taking in to stride good things, bad things, in a normal way. This is a quality of a devotee. Only a devotee can do this. So, of course, we cannot be in the shoes of great exalted devotees like Haridas Thakur, but we can try and develop this quality. Then we find the examples of Pandavas. No, these Pandavas, when Draupadi, you know, was dragged into the Asat Sabha, and Dushasana was, he dragged her into that Asat Sabha, and you know, he was trying to disrobe her, and the Pandavas, you know, Yudhishthir Maharaj, you know, Bhim and Arjun, Nakul, Sahadev, all great warriors, Savyasachi, Dhanurdhar, that is Arjun, they're all sitting there, and when this is going on, their heads, you know, are, you know, bent, and they are not doing anything. Does it mean that they did not have Kshatra Tej? They did not have the ability, you know, to resist? If Yudhishthira had just given an indication, you know, they would have, all the Kauravas would have been destroyed there and then. But they showed, you know, Titiksha Bhav. They were devotees of Lord Krishna, and they knew what the plan of the Lord was. So they were part and parcel of the plan of the Lord. Therefore, you know, they took all these things in stride. So it's a wonderful quality. It's not that they were not angry, but they controlled their anger. They managed their anger so very effectively. Srila Prabhupada has written in, I think it is in Krishna book, and His Holiness Radhana Swami made us repeat it several times in his class. And that statement everybody knows. The greatness of a person is estimated by his capacity to tolerate provoking situations. So the greatness is, you know, estimated by his capacity to tolerate provoking situations. Now, forget about our modern day world where they don't need any provoking situations, but here under the greatest provocation also, one, a pure devotee of the Lord doesn't get provoked. So this is a wonderful trait. And we have Lord's pure devotees exhibiting this quality very, very magnificently. So in Mahabharata, there is a story which I would like to share with you. Many of you may be aware also. Once it so happened, this happened in Vanaparva when they were in, you know, exile. What happened was that Draupadi, she deliberately, you know, tried to provoke Yudhishthira Maharaj. She wanted to provoke him. She said to him, he said, "O Lord, I am Drupada Kanya. I am daughter of Drupada Maharaj. And, you know, I am the younger sister of the great Drushtadyumna. And what is more, I am the wife of Pandavas. Don't you feel angry to see me, you know, walking in the forest? Aren't you provoked by that? Don't you see how miserable your brothers are in the forest? They have been deprived of what they wanted by the sons of Dhritarashtra. So don't you get angry with this Dhritarashtra putra, you know, the sons of Dhritarashtra. And I see that all the activities of Dhritarashtra's sons do not seem to have had any effect on you." And she said something. She said, "According to my feeling, my estimation, you have absolutely, you are not at all reacting to the evil deeds of Dhritarashtra's sons. So I feel that you don't have any Kshatra Tej in you." She said it in so many words that you are not a Kshatriya. So she wanted to provoke him. And then she said something else. She said, "My Lord, I can understand that if you forgive someone who has begged for forgiveness, that I understand. Or if somebody, you know, has committed offense towards you in ignorance or in foolishness, I can understand you are forgiving them. But Lord, you are forgiving these most evil Dhritarashtra's sons who knowingly, you know, have harassed us. I can't understand this at all." So at that time, Yudhishthira Maharaj gave a very beautiful reply. Says,
Atmanam cha parashchaiva trayate mahato bhayat krudhyantam prati krudhyan dvayoresha chikitsakah.
He said to Draupadi, he said that one who forgives a person who deserves our anger, such a person, you know, actually saves both the parties from mahat bhayat. So a person who is angry with you, who is actually, you know, on whom you feel like venting your anger, but you don't do it, you forgive that person, such a person, you know, saves himself. Because when you get angry with somebody, it's, you are actually, you know, having acid in your consciousness. So you are destroying yourself, and by your anger you are destroying other person also. But if only, you know, you can tolerate and forgive, then you are actually saving both the parties.
Tam krodham varjitam dhire katam asmat vidhascharet etad Draupadi sandhaya name manyu pravardhate.
He said that, Draupadi, how can I give place to anger in my heart which has been rejected by all dhiras, you know, all sober persons, you know, all great devotees of the Lord? They have rejected anger, they have thrown it out of their consciousness. Why are you expecting me, you know, to harbor anger in my heart? It's wrong. And then she said, an angry person is not aware of what he should do and what he should not do. And whatever comes to his mind, he says it and he acts thoughtlessly. So I don't want to become that. So this way, you know, Yudhishthira Maharaj, you know, actually instructs Draupadi. And he ultimately tells Draupadi, he says that, Draupadi, please do not give place to anger in your heart. Instead, fill your heart with quality of tolerance and forgiveness. You fill your heart with that, and if you do this, you'll be happy. So this is the instruction which Yudhishthira Maharaj gives. Now Yudhishthira Maharaj is personification of akrodha. Two qualities of, there are many qualities of Yudhishthira Maharaj, one can talk about him endlessly. Akrodh, and he's also Ajatashatru. He had no enemies. He's Ajatashatru and Akrodh. He had manifested that quality in his life so wonderfully well. And he says,
Kshama Tejasvinam Teja, Kshama Brahma Tapasvinam, Kshama Kshama Satyam Satyavatam, Kshama Yajna Kshama Shama.
So he says that effulgence of the effulgent, that is due to quality of forgiveness. He says that the Brahman whom the ascetic sees, due to forgiveness. Truthfulness of the truthful is due to, you know, forgiveness. Those who perform sacrifices, their sacrifice is due to quality of forgiveness. And he says, quality of peace, that is due to forgiveness. So everything, you know, is forgiveness, and therefore he encourages Draupadi to be forgiving. So we may think that this is something theoretical, cannot really happen in our life. Can we really develop this akrodha? We may not develop it, but we can definitely endeavor towards it. And we have many inspiring stories. I would like to share two of them, time permitting. The first one is about a saint from Maharashtra. He was from Paithan. He was living in Paithan. And his neighbor was a Yavana. And Yavana lived in a Dharmashala, which was in between this saintly person's house and the holy Godavari river. I'm talking about Paithan. So now every day many pious people would go and have bath in Godavari, whereas this Yavana, he would, every time anybody went for a bath, he made it his business to spit on them. So they would be forced to again go and have, you know, bath in the river and come back. So he was especially merciful to this saintly person in spitting on him, you know, he would keep spitting. So every day this saintly person would go for a bath into Godavari river and come back, this man would spit on him. Now he had developed this spitting, you know, into a fine art. Sometimes while traveling by bus, I see, you know, people, you know, there is very little space to spit in. Actually, it is an offense according to municipality. So there are bars, you know, and these experts, you know, spitters, they spit through in between, you know, space. How they manage it? Maybe expertise developed over a very long time. You know, training very hard. Now this particular individual, you know, his spit would come like a jet. And he would spit on this saintly person every day. And this saint, he would accept it, you know, Shirasa Vandya, he would accept it on his head. And very joyously, there was no reaction. He would go again to Godavari, take a bath, and come back. And this was the routine, daily routine. In fact, it was such a routine that one day this saintly person went and this Yavana was not there that day. He must have gone on a vacation or something. He was not there. So this saintly person looked here and there. Where are the spores? You know, the spit is not there on my head today. What happened? So this is how it was happening. So one particular day, it so happened that this Yavana, you know, he climbed up a tree. He climbed up a tree, and as the saintly person was going for a bath to the river, he started, you know, spitting on his head. So very smilingly, the saintly person would go again and have a bath and come back. Again he would spit. This happened not once, twice, thrice, four times, but happened 108 times. Now you can imagine, you know, I wonder, you know, how that Yavana could generate so much, you know, saliva. Our mouth would become dry, isn't it? But he must have trained for it for a long time, you know. Just like soldiers train, you know, he must have also trained himself. So he was, you know, spitting on and on and on and on, continuously spitting 108 times. He became, you know, exhausted. He was, you know, saliva must have got exhausted, but he became exhausted doing this trick. And within the core of his heart, he realized what offenses he had done against a saintly person. So at the end of it all, he went and fell at the feet of this saintly person. He said that, I have, you know, tormented you day after day, and today, you know, I have reached the, you know, the crest. I have done the peak. You know, I spat on you 108 times, and yet, you know, your face, you know, is smiling. You are not, you know, one bit affected. And really speaking, that saintly person had no emotion of any retaliation. Normally when somebody insults you or when somebody humiliates you, if you don't have the strength, you know, you may not do it, you may not retaliate, but at least in your heart, you know, you feel, you know, you curse, you do so many things. Sometimes, you know, a bully comes and attacks you, you can't fight with him, but in your heart, you know, you punch him, you do so many things. So here there was no such feeling, because, you know, he was akrodha, the personification of akrodha. He had no anger in him. He said to this man, he said that, you have acted according to your nature. But he said that today, you know, I have had the privilege of bathing 108 times in the holy river, Godavari, and, you know, purified myself. So he said that, thank you very much, you know. So this is how. So it's not something hypothetical, it's something which happens or happened. So what is the acid test for akrodha? I would like to narrate one more episode or story. What is the acid test for akrodha? So there was a person, you know, we call him Jijnyasu, or one who wanted to progress in spiritual life. for want of any better term, I'll call him Jignasu. So this Jignasu, he wanted to become, you know, he wanted spiritual, you know, progress. So he went and approached a holy person, and he went to him and he said, offered his obeisances and back to him, and he said that, please, you know, I want to advance, you know, spiritually. I want to realize God. So the saintly person said, very fine, very nice. All of us also are aspiring for that, wanting to go back home, back to Godhead. He said, very nice. He said, you go home and, you know, do bhajan for 1 year. Take up devotional life for 1 year. And after 1 year, you come to me and meet me. He was very happy. He went and started doing his bhajan, you know, activities. And then the day dawned when he was to come to see the guru. So there was a sweeper who is to sweep the hut of, you know, this Guru Maharaj, is to sweep every day. So the guru instructed the sweeper, when this Jignasu comes today, when he comes to, tries to come and meet me, you do one thing. With your broom, you put some dirt and dust on his body. Just throw it at him with his broom. Said, yes, he didn't want to do it, but, you know, I have been instructed. Said, okay. So this man came after 1 year, you know, of bhajan. He came into the dwelling place, ashram of Guru, and wanted to come. On the way, the sweeper followed the instructions of Guru with his broom, you know, some kachra was there. He just swept it on his body, on his clothes. He, you know, became, he was in rage. So he just wanted to chase after this, you know, sweeper and assault him. So he's running, but the sweeper was a younger man, this was an older man, he could not catch up with him. So he went back. So this person went home, had a bath, wore new clothes, and came to his guru. So as soon as he came in, the guru said that, you know, you have been wanting to bite people like a serpent, you know. So you wanted to beat up this person. So, you know, this is not the right stage. Go back home, you know, do bhajan for 1 more year and report next year. So next year, the person, he was very humble, obedient in that sense. So he went and did that. He didn't argue. So he went home, he did his bhajan, kriya, whatever, and then he came back. After he came back, this time the instruction to the sweeper was little different from the guru. He said that this time you touch the clothes of this Jignasu with your broom. With your broom, you just touch his clothes and then see what happens. The instructions were followed, so that man came. This fellow sweeper took the broom and touched it. So at that time, the reaction was different. That man, you know, used, you know, some angry words, and that's it. You know, used some few curses and then went in. Again, he went home, had bath, came back in nice dress, you know, dhoti kurta. Came there, and then, you know, he went and met the sage. So sage, as soon as he saw him, he said that, I have now come, you know, 2 years are over now, I have come. So he said that, you are, you know, still, you are hissing like a serpent. Huh? You are hissing like a serpent, so you are not ready. So go back and do bhajan for 1 more year and come back. So he went back, and this time, you know, after third year, he came back, came to that hermitage guru. This time, as soon as he came in, the sweeper poured the entire, you know, kachreka dabba on his head. But now, this man, Jignasu, he's, you know, he had become very peaceful, tranquil. So he actually told the sweeper, he said that, I'm very grateful to you. He said that, if it had not been for you, you know, I would not have, you know, been able to control my anger ever I was prone to anger very easily. I used to reach into excited state very easily. But you know, you have helped me, you know, to be peaceful. So he said that, thank you very much. So from this description, we understand that it's very, very important to develop this, at least try and develop this quality of peacefulness. Now, we are fortunate that we are in Srila Prabhupada's movement, Krishna consciousness movement, and we have been given a very easy method of, you know, conquering the enemies within us. Cheto darpana marjanam. How? By the process of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So this is a sublime process which can help us to begin with manage, then control, and finally conquer this enemy of anger which is within us. Now, enemy and lust, they go hand in glove. So, this is a very, very important, very simple technique which Prabhupada has given us, which our spiritual master has inculcated in us, that take up the process of chanting. And what is the prime requisite that is required? Trinadapi sunichena, tororapi sahishnuna, amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. If you want to chant the holy names of the Lord incessantly, continuously, then we have to be trunadapi sunichena. We have to be humbler than a blade of grass. Tarorapi sahishnuna, more tolerant than a tree. Expect no respect and give respect to everyone. So, this is like the foundation, you know, for our Krishna consciousness, practice of Krishna consciousness. Without this, it is all just a pretense. If you are not able to, you know, follow these principles, then it is more like a shobaji. So we have to try and practice this trunadapi sunichena, and by doing so and by chanting the holy names, we can try and perfect our life. This is a wonderful thing which Srila Prabhupada has given us. Prabhupada would say that you just be like an unripe mango on the mango tree. Just like being unripe mango. It's a mango season, therefore I'm giving this example. So unripe mango on a mango tree. So if you persist in your spiritual life under the instructions of a spiritual master and follow the instructions which have been given to us, then a day will dawn when the unripe mango will become ripe. Forget about the people who are, you know, plucking unripe mangoes and treating it with calcium carbide and, you know, and making them, you know, yellow and marketing them. Forget about them. But this is a spiritual example. You are an unripe mango on a mango tree. Just be there, and one day the unripe mango will become ripe mango, delicious, sweet. So the king of all fruits it will become. Similarly, we just have to be in Krishna consciousness, just have to be associating with the temple and with the devotees here, and try and serve the temple. That's very, very important. Not just be here, we have to try and serve the temple also. We can't just take things from the temple, we have to serve the temple also. So by doing this, now we have a glorious opportunity now. Soon, you know, Janmashtami is going to come, and you know, temple authorities want us to do our very best, collect as much Lakshmi as is possible. Here is a golden opportunity every devotee has. So we have to not just take things, but also give things. So here is an opportunity which we should exercise and use. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Kirtan? Question? Anybody has any questions or comments? We have some time, I believe. Yeah, some time. You have any question? Anyone? Yeah. There are no questions. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.